from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel. Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
Raleigh drops one in the air pretty deep to right. Acuna goes all the way back to the wall. Acuna leaps, and he makes the catch! What a play by Acuna! Kelnick goes to third, tagging up. Ronald Acuna Jr. shows some mad hops.
This is the gamer. He glanced at the wall. He knew how much time and how much room he had. He timed that jump perfectly. And we've been talking about this all game. Some athletes on this field today.
Ronald Acuna Jr. robbing Cal Raleigh. I hate to see the big dumper robbed like that. Yes, Cal Raleigh of the Mariners, the catcher, his nickname is the Big Dumper. See if you can guess why, folks. I'll give you a minute. Why would a ball player be called the Big Dumper? Anybody got a guess? Yeah, it's because his butt is very large, according to some teammates. Jared Kelenic, his teammate, put it out there on Twitter when Raleigh got called up. Ooh, look, Big Dumper going to the show. And people were like, what? Scooby? It's pretty good, Scooby. I feel good about my Scooby.
I thought it was great.
I feel good about my Krusty the Clown. Burn that seat.
That was good, too.
Thank you very much.
Stubbs would be impressed.
Yeah, well, he is. I broke it out the other day. We were talking about elective surgery in transition, and I said, do you see me complaining about the breasts? But anyway, none of that is why you're listening to Hit and Run on 670 The Score. Cal Raleigh, the Big Dumper, robbed by Ronald Acuna Jr., who I last segment called inarguably the best player in baseball. Inarguably. And a couple of texters are like, have you ever heard of Shohei Ohtani? And they make a good point.
That Ohtani guy's pretty good,
make a very good point about that. So maybe I shouldn't say inarguably the best player in baseball when I'm talking about a guy who doesn't pitch as well. Earlier this week, by the way, Ohtani reached base 5 times and threw 7 innings in the same game. And then the next night, he was back in the lineup batting 3rd. Meanwhile, Chris Sale, after going 7 innings last night, is going to spend, what, the whole day in an ice tub? You know, maybe he'll golf tomorrow. Something like that. Ohtani is back in the lineup the next day. So, oh boy.
I heard there was a stat I heard a couple days ago in one of his starts. He had more hits than he had allowed. And that's happened in like multiple starts this year.
Sure. It's because Ohtani is an absolute unicorn and we've never seen anything like him. He's inarguably the best player in baseball. Ronald Acuna, really good, though. He leads MLB in runs and hits. He leads the National League in steals, OPS, total bases, and WAR. That's pretty good. And Ronald Acuna Jr. on pace to lead the National League in steals and OPS. And I asked you the question before the break. Only 2 players since 1945 have done it. Led a league in stolen bases and on-base plus slugging. And they are, a couple of texters had it. Ricky Henderson in 1990. Ricky Henderson, how you doing? Ricky Henderson in 1990. And Willie Mays did it in back-to-back seasons, 1957 and 1958. That's it. That's who Ronald Acuña Jr. is chasing with steals and OPS combined. So outrageous, outrageous stuff.
I thought you might say Alfonso Soriano. I thought he might sneak into that after that 40-40 season there with the Nats.
Yeah, you know, he has that. That's the last time. I believe that's the last time anybody's gone 40-40 is 2006 Soriano.
I think so.
Acuña's chasing that, obviously. And I'll be surprised if he doesn't, as long as he stays healthy. Hope he stays healthy. Spencer Strider, his Braves teammate, was asked about Ronald Acuña, and he said, he's the best player I've ever seen. I don't know what else to say about him. Words can't really do it justice. He's the best player in the game right now, and I'm just glad he's on our team. That's Spencer Strider. Hey, Spencer, what about Ohtani, man? What about Ohtani? He'd probably go, oh, yeah. Well, I mean, other than Ohtani. Ohtani's a unicorn. So I'm with Spencer on getting my head out over my skis. This afternoon, because of a rainout yesterday at not Shea Stadium, it's called Citi Field, folks. Come on, get with it. Get modern with me. All right, Greg Jeffries isn't coming through that door. He's not. There's no Roger McDowell or Jesse Orosco in that bullpen. Okay? It's Citi Field. Anyway, the Mets are going to send Max Scherzer and Justin Verlander to the mound for a doubleheader against Cleveland in the Francisco Lindor reunion series, a trade that Cleveland won. I think Cleveland won that trade. Ahmed Rosario, Andrés Giménez, massive financial flexibility. I think they won that. Mets probably still do it because they don't care about money. It doesn't mean anything to them. So they've got Frankie Lindor. But Scherzer and Verlander for the Mets today.
Good luck.
Yeah, seriously. So the Mets are going to be the first time to start pitchers who have each won three or more Cy Youngs in both ends of a doubleheader. We've got two guys that each have three or more Cy Young awards. Good luck. But Verlander got booed last time, right?
He did get booed a little bit, yeah.
In his debut.
Yeah. He did fan three Rays, but yeah, got booed a little bit.
Got booed. Only three strikeouts. That's not enough, Justin.
Come on, man. At least get more strikeouts than Cy Young awards.
Yeah, they're paying you a giant pile to be yourself. Meanwhile, Max Scherzer flailing about this year. Complaining about the pitch clock after boasting about it early, telling everyone that injuries are coming for pitch clock people and pitchers, and oh, by the way, getting caught using sticky stuff and suspended for 10 days because he's desperately trying to be as good as he has been for his entire career, trying to live up to what he is. So, woof. But anyway, they're really good and have been historically. The only team to start pitchers who had even won two or more Cy Young awards in a doubleheader. Also the Mets, September of 2008, Pedro Martinez and Johan Santana. That from Sarah Langs. But then this one might be the best stat about this doubleheader. Tommy John and Joe Niekro were sent out by the Yankees in 1986 to start a doubleheader. That's the last time a team started two guys who had already won 200 games in their career. That's the last time, 86. And now we have Scherzer and Verlander this afternoon. White Sox have been getting very, very, very good bullpen work from Kendall Graveman of late, and especially Joe Kelly of late, who is on an absolute crazy heater. Joe Kelly's throwing everything he wants for strikes, and he's been borderline unhittable. Over the last eight innings. I think he still has just given up one hit over the last eight innings, and it was an infield hit. It's a dribbler. That's Joe Kelly's run right now. And soon they will have Liam Hendricks. Liam Hendricks threw to hitters on Friday at Sox Park. The next time he takes the mound, it is going to be on the road, and he will be doing that as well against hitters, probably in Cleveland. Getting closer for his 2023 debut. Be fun if that would happen at home. But the White Sox on the road with Cleveland and Detroit this week. Maybe it'll happen in Detroit. But either way, his first appearance at home is going to be very, very celebratory and should be. And then we learned this on Friday as well, that not once, not twice, but three times, Liam Hendricks has done the thing that a veteran on a rehab stint often does when they're with the minor league team, and that's buy food, like the post-game spread. He's done it three different times.
Liam, a couple of food trucks came out this week to visit the Knights staff, the players, and then even the opposing team as well. This is something that, you know, rehab players will do for the team that they're playing with, but not always for the staff, not always for the opposing team. What went into the decision to do that for everybody here this week?
I mean, you take care of everyone around, because at the end of the day, there's a lot of people who are very underappreciated, especially on the back workings of baseball, whether it be the front office, whether it be the umpires, whether it be, I mean, you can look at the opposing team or the coaching staff or anything like this, they're very undervalued. And I think any way to show my little piece of gratitude for anything they're able to do and put this together on a nightly basis is a little bit of food can, it's a small way of showing our appreciation and recognizing that we understand what they do.
That's really, really cool. Liam Hendricks has done it three different times. He's a great dude. The work that he has done, in his charity work and just the way that he talks about stuff, his openness, his willingness to stand up for what he believes. Big fan of Liam Hendricks, the person, as much as I am of Liam Hendricks, the pitcher. Verlander versus Shane Bieber in one of those games. That'll be the nightcap game. And I think that's on ESPN. In fact, tonight, Sunday Night Baseball is Verlander and Bieber.
That's not bad.
From Citi Field. That, folks, is not bad indeed. Let's squeeze in a phone call before we take a break and talk to Justin Stone, the director of hitting for the Chicago Cubs. This is Ben in Queens on 670 The Score. Hello, Ben.
Good morning, Matt. I was just talking to Ruben about his piano. Always a pleasure. I hope you're doing well in Chicago.
Thank you, sir.
I hear, as you know, number one Cubs optimist. I'm looking at the Pythagorean. And the Cubs have the expected win loss of as good as anybody in their division and as good as anybody in the wild card race. So that would suggest that there have been a few decisions up at the top that have led to the Cubs to have the record they have.
Hmm.
Now, why Nick Madrigal has got so many starts at third base with his 65 OPS plus is beyond me. I think they must be trying to showcase him to trade him because he really shouldn't be on the roster. He's in the bottom percentile in almost every significant stat in the league.
Stat cast, you mean, in terms of the percentile? Stats?
I'm looking at stat cast. For example, the ex-Wobicon, expected weighted on base, he's in the bottom percentile of the league. You know who's in the top percentile of the league? Patrick Wisdom.
Huh.
Now, I want to just talk about a couple things about Patrick Wisdom. I know 37% K rate. I know he let the ball play him last night on the error.
Yeah, back that.
If you look at the plate discipline, the O swing down, the Z swing down, the swing percentage down, the contact rate is up. He has the walk percentage is up. He has made a good decisions, and he has made good changes at the plate, and he has not been rewarded as such. He has 156 plate appearances. If you look at like Max Muncy or Kyle Schwarber, I know they're in different parts of the lineup, but they have 20 to 40 more plate appearances than Patrick Wisdom. Patrick Wisdom, if he was on the Rays, he would be batting fourth or fifth every damn day. I don't know why he's not in the lineup more. I get it, Mastroboni's in there today. But Patrick Wisdom is in the league leaders in everything. The ISO is off the charts.
Mm-hmm.
136 OPS plus. Please help me out with this, Matt. I love you. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Ben. Appreciate it. It's a great call. I'll tell you what. When the Cubs brought up Morel and Mervis, they answered a bunch of questions about, well, are they trying to give David Ross the best 26 guys so he can win? Are they really considering this year as a contender or as just a building block? That's the big question, right? Is how does the front office feel about this team? Morel and Mervis was an answer. And then all the moves the other day were another answer. Eric Hosmer, love ya. There's no spot here, though. I'm sorry. Keegan Thompson, love ya. But you're going to have to develop in the minors because we can't afford to give you opportunities up here while you're struggling. Okay? Edwin Rios, come back. Nico, obviously, come back. But the one move that's left, there's a couple things that's left. One move that's clear is Madrigal. He's given you a body of work now. I know they feel good about his defense at third base, but you need the bop that Wisdom can give you. And now here's Rios. If you really want his lefty bat in the lineup, then clearing away Madrigal for a pitcher, for a reliever of some kind that you bring up in the next few days is something that makes a lot of sense. How about this? Let's mark the tape and remember this, okay? When Cody Hoyer gets activated, probably on the 29th, a pitcher swapped in for a position player, and it might be sooner than that. Monday's an off day. Maybe it's Tuesday. But swapping a pitcher into that relief corps and getting rid of a position player who's excess, and that would be Madrigal, who has options. Maybe that's the moment that Nick Madrigal goes back to the minors. Let's look at that and think about that possibility over the next couple of weeks. It is Hit and Run on 670 The Score. I'm Matt Spiegel. Justin Stone, the director of hitting for the Cubs, joins us next.
The premier baseball show in Chicago, Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel.
Mejia, ready and delivers. Swing, ground ball, past the pitcher, in the center field. Bogu gets the wave. Here he comes. Smokies win. The Smokies win. Pete Crow Armstrong has delivered the winner. A 4-3 final. What do you say? Look at him.
Pete Crow Armstrong with the walk-off winner for the Tennessee Smokies in the Cubs organization. Among the names we may mention to Justin Stone, who is the director of hitting for the Chicago Cubs and joins us right now on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Justin, thanks so much for the time. Welcome to Hit and Run with me, Matt Spiegel. How are you?
Great. You know, that soundbite you just played of Pete and Jordan really fires me up. I love hearing that. That Tennessee club's really fun to watch.
Yeah, they are, right? Who else are you enjoying watching on that club right now as a guy who's closely checking out all the hitters?
Yeah, I actually just got back from Pensacola from watching that team. You know, there's justifiably, Owen Casey and Pete get a lot of the headlines and a lot of the time on the prospect list, but the depth of our system is so good, and there's so many players that, you know, are riding 900 and 1,000 OPSs that don't get talked about a lot. DJ Murray is leading the Carolina League, or excuse me, the Southern League in OPS right now. Chase Strump is right up there having another good year. I mean, we just have so many players that don't get talked about enough that would probably be top 20 prospects in a lot of different organizations.
Yeah, is Jordan Nwogu one of those guys? I did a few games in the spring last year, and he hit a couple of bombs of a game I was doing. I was like, oh, my goodness. And he's doing well, right?
Jordan has been on and off so far this spring, but he's definitely a player that when you see him, he'll open your eyes because he'll do something once a game that you're like, that's just not normal to happen on a baseball field. But even his miss hits are 105 miles an hour, and he's so athletic. You know, with the frame, it looks like he could play outside linebacker for the Bears. The guy can really, really run. So every time he gets on base, he's a stolen base threat too.
All right, so Justin, here's what I'm wondering. As you're watching all these guys, I mean, it we've gotten a chance to get smarter as baseball fans because we watched a Theo Epstein rebuild, you know, followed by a Rick Hahn rebuild, and now we're seeing Jed and Carter take this next level step, and that meant you and Craig Breslow. And it's like, it's so fun for a baseball fan to learn like how the sausage is made and then see how different people make different kinds of sausage. Like it's really interesting. I'm fully expecting at some point the Cubs are going to have to trade from this prospect depth that you're talking about in order to acquire a superstar, you know, or to acquire whatever they need. As you're evaluating players that you have, you obviously want them all to do well, but when you're noticing that somebody, I mean, are you evaluating with that in mind as well? Like, this might be someone we could afford to trade. This would be someone I wouldn't want to trade. Does that kind of thought process come up?
Yeah, it does. You know, there's a lot of people that have their hand in that, and Jed and Carter will ultimately make those decisions. But we're evaluating our own talent with a lot of different departments outside of just the pro scouting, but PD does the same thing. So it's something we keep in mind. You know, that's not of my concern, to be honest. My concern is to get our players better at hitting. And by that natural progression, you know, if you're doing a good job, your players are getting better, and it gives Jedden Carter more options for those type of decisions.
Yeah, that makes sense. How consistent is the teaching and the philosophy from level to level within the organization right now?
Well, that's something when I stepped in that was a big concern of when you're the head of a department, that the message, one, is correct for the player, but also consistent. And, you know, owning a business, I have elite baseball training down the street from the stadium. That was something as I grew in a business and we had 50 instructors. Hmm. You can't have a student go from one cage to another and learn conflicting information. And same thing holds true with the Cubs organization. You can't have conflicting information from one level to the next. Now, I'm super proud, probably proudest of all of the staff that we've put in place with the Cubs organization. And almost all of us had previous relationships and had taught together in the past. We were already working off of the same system. So I would put our minor league hitting staff up against anybody's in baseball. I would like to selfishly think it's the best.
So, I mean, it's so important, isn't it? I mean, and obviously some organizations do this better than others. I can't imagine being a young hitter and being told one thing at AA and then getting promoted. And first of all, what needs to happen for that kid when he gets to AAA? Like he gets reminded of, hey, we know exactly who you are and exactly what you do and how you learn, like how you talk to these guys. It's got to be a lot to try and make sure that everybody's on the same page with.
Yeah, we actually have a pretty good process in place for that. Everything is cataloged and logged in a player's file that's digital. But whenever a player moves levels, the hitting coaches, the coordinators, even...
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the Markable Fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center... Keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Jared Banner and myself, we all hop on a Teams call and a Zoom call.
Yep.
And we talk about what is happening in real time, what is the player's progression. So just to make sure that there's not any communication gaps when a player goes from level to level.
Would you, talking to Justin Stone, the director of hitting for the Chicago Cubs, would you give us like just sort of a quick rundown of some of the systems and data that you use? Be it like, I always hear about things like, you know, Rapsodo and Edgertronic cameras and Codify for pitchers and things like that. What's some of the stuff that you guys use, if you could fill us in a little bit?
Well, in our baseline labs and you know, what we're doing in spring training or the Arizona complex, well, it's everything from markerless motion capture to force plates to wearable technology that will test the kinematic system of the body as you go through the swing. So it gets very detailed. But now with the new minor league CBA, some of that can be limited to the player. So what we are fortunate of having and have had the longest across major and minor league baseballs are markerless motion capture in-game. And we have that at all of our minor league affiliates. We have it at the big league stadium. So we're getting next day biomechanical data that all of our coaches are trained to know how to break down. So that is the best information you could possibly get. And that's what we largely work off of day after day.
When did that get established as something that you have at every level like that?
We've had it for 5 years. Across the affiliates, I think we're going on year number 3. So the mass of data that we've compiled, not just with our own players, but across the league, is definitely a competitive advantage.
Wow, that's fascinating. So if you have, you can see like similar body type or similar swings from one player's data to the other. If you see similarities, do you compare and contrast like that with that data?
Yeah, we do. I mean, think of a swing signature as being just that. It's like your own unique thumbprint. So you have to get a little deeper than that and understand how the human body just moves and interacts with the ground. And from player to player, that's different. And you can't just look at that from the system and say player A is going to swing like player B because they look the same.
Mm-hmm.
Underneath the surface, you have to understand how the player moves. Unfortunately, with other teams' players, you really have to get your hands on them to do a movement assessment to do that. But with our own players, that's like day one, do not pass go, do not collect $200 until our coaches do a movement assessment on our players to understand the underlying movement characteristics that they have.
So, wow, the swing signature, when you talk about that, does that have everything? Does that have the stance, the setup, the follow through, or are you just talking about the bat path through the zone?
No, it starts from the beginning. It's really optimizing efficiency for that player, knowing their strength level, you know, what type of player are we projecting them to be, what type of offensive output are we trying to get from them, and then factoring in their own unique movement profile. So all of those things go into consideration and sometimes leads to a change where we bring something to a player and say, hey, we think you could be a little more efficient in this area, and, you know, that might add a tick or two of exit velocity, which can make a big difference. That's a big jump for a player. In 2019, we were 30th in all of Major and Minor League Baseball in organizational exit velocity, and now we're number one. And largely that goes to how good our high-performance program is, but some of that, too, is how good our coaches are optimizing that swing efficiency.
Wow, so that's a big one. When were you 30th? Gloat about that again. Give me that success.
In 2019.
2019. So from 2019 to 23, as an organization, top to bottom.
Correct. We were 30th. In organizational exit velocity, and now we stand at number one.
Wow, that is amazing. Talking to Justin Stone, the director of hitting for the Cubs. When you're deciding what to share of all this data with a given player, that's where it's fascinating to me because of the so many different ways that players learn. I'm sure you've had moments where you're like, damn it, I gave that guy too much.
Right?
So how do you figure that out? Do you ask the player, or are there ways that you can figure that out before you even come to them?
Yeah, that's something I think our department had to learn, because most of us came out of the facility side where people are paying for your opinion and they want it right now. It doesn't work that way in pro ball. You have to establish trust and a relationship with the player, and you oftentimes are back pocketing that information.
Mm-hmm.
But the general philosophy on that, because you can overwhelm somebody pretty easily with too much information going to them. So we will give the player as little as we possibly can to get them to do what we need them to do. If you flood them with too much information, they're just going to skedaddle right out of your office and not want to have anything to do with it in the future. So that's something that's really important to us, to understand the player's learning style. And you do that by developing trust and relationship from the start.
Yeah. Thank you for skedaddle, by the way. Underutilized in conversation, in my opinion. Cody Bellinger is fascinating to me, because I'm sure the Dodgers, who obviously you've got to feel like the Dodgers are a rival for doing what you do as well as anybody in the game, right?
Yeah, I would argue that they and the Yankees and the Rays are of that upper echelon that would have a similar program to what we have.
Okay, so Dodgers, Yankees, Rays, and Cubs, which is a hell of a place to be. They must have tried everything with Cody Bellinger, and what you guys have tried has worked. What has been the key there for you think?
I can't speak for what the Dodgers did or didn't do, because I wasn't there, but I do know that they would have similar information to what we did for Cody. So I think that speaks to how good of a communicator Dustin Kelly, and that's another coach that's come through our minor league system as a coordinator now at the big league level, just shows that fluidity that we have throughout the system. But Dustin's such a good communicator, and he would have done just that. He would have established the relationship first before you attack it with a teaching program.
Mm-hmm. So that's, but you really, you let the hitting coaches do their jobs. For you, it's about developing trust with the hitting coaches, I would assume.
No, you have to. If you're going to get the most out of your people, you got to let them work. You can't. I'm not a micromanager in my management style, but I also know the talent level that we've amassed. And the front, you have to give credit to the front office, too, because they have allowed us to pay these coaches what they're worth to make our players better. And that doesn't happen in every organization. I think our management, Jed and Carter, understand the importance of player development. That's kind of the new frontier of getting a competitive advantage, and they've gone out of the way to make sure that we can amass not just talented players, but really talented coaches.
All right, so am I not going to see Justin Stone, like, sauntering through the clubhouse and, like, pulling Ian Happ aside and saying, hey, you know, I saw this? Or would you do that every once in a while with a big league player?
No, I don't. I like to be the guy kind of behind the computer screen in the weeds. I want those messages not to happen for me. Sometimes there's a front office message that has to be relayed. Maybe some urgency with the player that you want to really push a button on. But generally, I want those communication streams to go from the coach, the person they're in the weeds with day after day. That's the person they confide in. So that information may come from me. It may come from a coordinator, but it's going to be delivered by a coach.
This is really interesting stuff for people who love baseball and love hitting. So I remember when it seemed this way. I remember Tom Verducci wrote about it in Sports Illustrated that, like, pitchers living on the bottom of the zone, everything sinking, two-seamers and the like, led eventually to a launch angle revolution. And then that was countered. I remember the series where the Dodgers, like, oh, they know how to get out Rizzo and Schwarber and Bryant and everybody because they're throwing high four-seam fastballs with carry and then something that breaks 12-6 off of that. Good luck, everybody. So, and where are we? Where are we since then? You know, catch me up a little bit in terms of hitting philosophy in the game, if that progression that I just gave you voice to is indeed how it went.
Yeah, you can't hear a nationally broadcast game without, it's like having on your bingo card, the launch angle swing gets used over and over again. you're right. There's ebbs and flows and trends in the game of baseball. And the high four-seamer is one of them. You know, the sweeper this year is one of them. And so as hitting coaches, we are all also, you know, having to play a little bit of defense at time and catch up because pitching tends to set the trend and then we have to follow after it. So we talk about swing playing a lot with our players and then more importantly, like really educating them on what that means, like how the bat in the slotting action, that's the first move of the bat coming down into the zone. And as the barrel turns under, it's going to create some sort of swing plane, you know, a flatter plane, one more uphill that would be called a launch angle swing, or one that's more downhill and steep of something you'd have seen in the 80s of the guys that are putting the ball on the turf a lot on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So educating our players on how their swing plane interacts with that four-seamer allows us a teaching moment to say, okay, if you want to be able to hit this pitch, this is what you're going to have to do with your body and with your swing. But more importantly, in reality, that pitch isn't a strike very often. So it's the swing decision part of that, of letting them know this is what your hot zone is. And instead of working on the high spin four-seamer over and over again and machine work at the top of the zone, let's just lay off that pitch. It's not a high-percentage pitch for anybody.
Oh, God, that's so hard, though. It's so hard. It looks so good, Justin.
It is the hardest thing to teach. If I could go and do mechanical work with a player, like I'm 95% confident we're going to be able to make those changes. Swing decisions and getting into the cognitive part of hitting is so difficult, and we know so little about it.
Oh, man, that's fascinating. We have the good fortune to talk to Nico Horner every week on Parkins and Spiegel on the show, and I love talking with that guy. And he said something this week that, like, sometimes you have to swing at the 58-footer if you're going to hit major league velocity. So, like meaning that you just got to be ready, and maybe you look terrible against a breaking ball in the dirt, but guess what? If you're a little late on the fastball down the first base line, that's still a strike, is what he said. And it was like, wow. So that's another challenge, right? You have to not be afraid to embarrass yourself every once in a while.
Yeah, and as you climb the ladder, you get less of those hitter's pitches at every level. You know, that's part of what Matt's going through at the big league level right now. Is like, you know, I don't get that center cut pitch as often as I traveled from, you know, high A to double A to triple A and now in the big league. So that is an important piece of it, is like making sure that when you get your hitter's pitch that you're on it.
You think Mervis will adjust to what's happening to him? Seeing, because the scouting is so much better in the bigs, and the pitchers are better, obviously.
Yeah, Matt's a Duke kid. He's really, really smart. And despite him being really smart, he's also extremely simple. He knows what he needs to do to be successful. So yeah, we're confident he's going to make that adjustment.
All right, good. All right, two more quickies for Justin Stone. What are the challenges for Brennan Davis, who made a great play in the field last night? And we'd all like to see more offensive progression from him, obviously.
Yeah, Brennan's a what we call a confidence hitter. You're going to see a couple games for him where he comes out, and then it's just going to be like, well, what was I worried about the first 2 months of the season? But coming off of an injury, it takes a little bit more time, especially with a back injury for hitters. You would say the same thing for golfers. Sometimes that those are career enders potentially for people. So the ability for him to just be free and easy with his A swing, it's going to take a little bit longer with somebody just coming off of a back injury. And so he'll catch a couple barrels, and then we'll forget about the past, and he'll take off and continue the hot Brennan Davis hitting that you've seen from him in recent years.
And then if I could buy future stock on PCA or Owen Casey, which one should I buy, sir?
Take them both. Yeah, I can't give you that answer. You're setting me up right there.
Come on, man.
They're both really, really different players. Extremely exciting. PCA has been on the board for a lot of people for a while. No one's coming as a piece of that Yu Darvish trade. But I will say the progression that Owen has made from having a good year last year at South Bend, but, you go back and look at the numbers, it doesn't, floor you. This is a top three prospect in our organization. But to put up the numbers he's putting up in Double A right now at a much tougher level, and the toughest pitching in all of Double A is that in the Southern League. And to seeing what he is doing, man, he's really taken off this year.
All right. So I heard that. So Owen Casey futures. I'm going to buy those. Thank you. No, it's like asking who's your favorite child, right? I mean,
It is. I had that conversation. Pete was out for a couple of days with an allergic reaction. We spent about an hour a few days ago just talking in the dugout. And we say, I have two girls. I'm a travel softball dad on Sundays, which is what I'm getting ready to do here. But I say I have 150 boys. We are emotionally invested in seeing all of you do well. And we spend so little time across the minor leagues of celebrating the victories because you just assume that those guys are okay. And so, but you spend all of your time butting your head against the wall. Am I pushing the right button to get these one or two guys that are struggling off and going again? So it is. Our coaches wear that emotionally, and I do too.
I was lucky enough to be a softball dad, a softball stepdad for a couple of years, and including some college softball. My God, I fell in love with the game. I hadn't been that close to it. It's so cool, and the dimensions are shorter. It's like you better run hard, and you better get that ball from third to first quickly in that game.
Yeah, I enjoy it. It's new for me too. This is not something that I grew up with the game of softball. Obviously, a baseball guy. But really, I just put my lawn chair down the right field line and shut up and don't coach and just go through the process of enjoying the sport with my daughter.
That's healthy for you. That's good for you. All right. Last thing. Give us a couple of guys, that you feel are sort of success stories from what you as a program have tried to do. Guys who are rising. You're like, man, that guy picked this up because of this coach or this philosophy or whatever. Give me one or two that you're really proud of right now.
I think I'll go with some. There's so many names that I could list right there, and some of them are the unsung heroes that aren't in the top 30. Like an Ezekiel Pagan is tearing it up at South Bend right now, and a Jake Slaughter that's knocking on the doors of the big leagues after just two phenomenal years this year and last. But let's go with a couple that your listeners are viewing day in and day out in a Cubs broadcast. So we'll go with Christopher Morel and Nelson Velasquez. So those guys have made some outstanding mechanical adjustments, and both of them have done just a really good job of improving the swing decisions. And I think everybody loves to watch Christopher Morel play, right? The electric smile, just what he does on a baseball field. That is my daughter's favorite player, and she blushes every time she sees him. So those two guys, we're really proud to be able to graduate from the major league level and then see him have some success this year.
What was the key for Morel to become what he has been?
Christopher is one of those really loose body types. So there's a lot of laxity in the swing. That means he's like a very elastic rubber band that has a big rope in the middle of his body. So it was a challenge when you're younger and less physical, and you can see how physical he is today, of tightening up that swing. So he had a lot of length off the backside of his swing that he would have to start the swing a little bit sooner, and that leads you to some problems with chase on the secondary pitch. So have him be able to tighten up the swing with a combination of the high performance work and then what he's done with our coaches is helps him get off to the start that you've seen this year.
Well, he's been a joy to watch. Justin Stone, this was really fun. Thanks for the generosity with your time. Enjoy your softball today, and we'll talk to you again sometime, I hope.
Thank you. I have no other skill sets other than talking hitting, so I'll do that with you anytime you'd like.
Good to know. Good to know you found the right gig for it. That's the key.
I'm 46 years old. I think I've managed to skirt having to get a real job up at this point in my life.
Hey, man, right there with you. How are you? You know, here I am. I can relate completely. Thank you, Justin. Appreciate it. Boy, he's fun. That's Justin Stone, the director of hitting for the Chicago Cubs. Taylor McGregor will join us at the top of the hour. Also next hour, Jack McMullen from Just Baseball, who is also the AAA voice of the Indianapolis Indians down there, got a chance to see Kyle Hendricks and Hayden Wesneski. So we will bring some of that to you as well. Keep it here on 670 The Score.
About how Quatrero thinks about his ball club. He knows this is not a thunderous offensive lineup. He doesn't want to give away a run early, but normally you play the infield back in this situation.
Especially with two in scoring position and a base hit. Benintendi will score. Robert right behind him. Great read, great send. It's 2-1.
The premier baseball show in Chicago. Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel.
That was Len Casper and Steve Stone on the call from NBC Sports Chicago. It is me, Matt Spiegel, with you here on Hit and Run. Yoan Moncada, two-run base hit there in the first inning. Tim Anderson was brutal yesterday. It was at that baseball game in the sun, a gorgeous day. The White Sox played very, very well, got some key hits. Lucas Giolito gave up the home run to Sal Perez, and that was pretty much it. Some incredible defense from the White Sox all over that game, a 5-3-5 double play, strike him out, throw him out double play. And really the only thing I saw that I was like, woof, because we're used to a lot of that with White Sox games this year. There were not many woof moments, but every single Tim Anderson at bat was a woof. There was a strikeout early, then there was a double play, and then there was another double play. I think he went 0-for-4, and the two double plays, I mean, dude is hitting it on the ground. He's not hitting it on the ground very hard. The other day, who was it who was talking about his bat looked slow? Is that AJ talking about his bat looking slow? I think it also might have been Josh Nelson on with Burnsy and Holmes on this station. But it's a really bad offensive moment for Tim Anderson. As I share with you that he is not in today's starting lineup. Here's the lineup for the White Sox going against the Royals. And Carlos Perez of the Royals is their pitcher. Andrew Benintendi leads off. Carlos Hernandez is the pitcher for the Royals. Andrew Benintendi leads off. Jake Berger hits second, the designated hitter. Get that man as many plate appearances as possible, especially at home right now. Luis Robert Jr. hits third and plays center. Yoan Moncada, good to see that. He tweaked something just a little on going for a grounder to his right yesterday. Saw a brief limp, but he's okay and says the back is no issue whatsoever. Yasmani Grandal is the catcher today for Lance Lynn. Clint Frazier is up and in the lineup and in right field. Go get him, Clint. That is no longer Jackson Frazier, but Clint Frazier seems to be in a very good place. Absolutely killing the ball at AAA over the last 9-10 games. So he plays right field. Gavin Sheets at first base. Andrew Vaughn with the day off. Hanser Alberto at second. Romy Gonzalez at short is your nine-hitter in for Tim Anderson. And Lance Lynn is your starting pitcher. In what is a must-sweep series on a must-win Sunday for the White Sox against the Kansas City Royals. And they should be able to do it. They are not dead yet. It is simply too early in the year. This division is simply too winnable to punt on. And it is just, they've got to keep showing up and try to play as clean as they can and ride whichever hot hand it needs to be ridden aggressively. Pedro Grifol, I love you having Jake Berger up there in the two hole. Do it again. It's Matt Spiegel here with you on Hit and Run on 670 The Score. Taylor McGregor from the Marquee Sports Network joins us next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.